This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
Welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, guys? We're back. We're here to talk modern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about today. That's what we talk about on this podcast.
This was a fun topic. We just spent a lot of time
doing prep work.
Out.
Yeah. So today, as the title of this episode said, and so you are probably now familiar with, we are going to do the, well, technically now, top 30, but we're going to count down the top 10, the bottom 10, top 30 decks in modern history, the top 10.
Really, it's the top 10 modern.
It's really
decks
the top.
Ever.
Well, no, we're doing top 20 modern.
We're gonna
decks.
Give some honorable mentions, and we're gonna rank the like 11 through 20.
We have the 30 ranked that we've decided to rank. The first 10 are gonna be quick. I'm just gonna list them off and the way we did it to give you a point breakdown, and then we'll do shoutouts, and then we'll get into it. Is Ben gave each one a number 1 out of 10, and I gave each one a number 1 out of 10, and then our very, very, very important, well educated. Magic card scientists took those two ratings and then used that information to then rate all 30 decks. And then when there were ties, they then came back to us and we informed them of which of those decks were likely to be better. And then they took that information and then once again applied very strict, complicated algorithms to figure out what the best 30 decks of all time in modern are.
Very complicated.
It's all very, 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 very technical.
It's just, you know, technical industry jargon.
Totally. Totally, totally. All right, so to get into this.
To do it.
First, I want to shout out everything. So make sure to follow us on Twitter. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
Go to Facebook and search for the Masters of Modern group. There is now a group on Facebook. Go find it. It is a great way to communicate with other people that like the show, ourselves, and modern content in general. Make sure to go to collected.company. That is our website. And that is also where the Command Zone, our sister podcast, lives. They do awesome Commander content every week. They had a great spoiler card last week. It was this sweet Sphinx that does all the things. And
it was sick.
And you can find game nights there. And you can find all the other great stuff that they do.
Totally.
And make sure to check out our Patreon. It's the reason we're able to do this show. It's the reason we're able to afford this show. It's really important. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, it's huge. It'd be great if you guys would help us out there. And then last but not least, check out my Anchor station, 10 Minutes of Magic. You can download the app anchor.fm. It's short form audio content, little audio blurbs. There's a trivia league on Tuesdays, all kinds of other stuff, fun stuff that we do on there. So just download that, check it out, and you will get me and sometimes Alex doing content every day for 10 minutes or less with, you know, 2-3 minutes at a time.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Cool. I think that is all of the official shout outs. If we are forgetting someone or something, please let us know. So let's get into it. So I just want to break down the score and the number. We're not going to talk at all about these decks, so
right.
No comments, but I'm going to break down 30 through 20. So Blue Moon with 2 points, Living End with 3, Titan Shift with 5, tied with Titan Shift is Grishul Brand with 5, Blue-White Control at 6, Boggles tied at 6, tied at 8 we have Death Shadow and Ad Nauseam, tied at 10 points we have Lantern Control and Eggs. And that is the bottom 10 cards.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the nature of what we're doing here, guys, because you probably heard some decks and you're like, Death Shadow, what? The idea was, Modern's been around for like, how long now? 6 years?
Right.
Six years?
I think that sounds right.
We've been playing
Modern. No.
I think so.
No, can't be. It hasn't been around as long as me and Whitney have been dating.
I believe it has.
I
moved here in 2009, and I believe it was already around by 2011. I'm almost positive.
Okay.
It was like a new thing. I think it might have gotten announced in
2011. No, but we played in extended GPs together for at least 2 years worth of content.
No, I didn't play a single extended GP.
That's not true.
I played standard.
No, you played super extended.
No.
Yeah, you did. You took Naya. I was at the tournament with you. You took Naya. You played Blood Braid Elf in the format.
No, I played Moon Zoo, and that was a modern deck. That was modern.
That was modern?
Yes. Modern. I think modern has been around since 2011. I'm almost positive.
Okay.
Pause the show right now. I'm going to look.
All right, so we just looked it up, and the confusion was that the first modern GP was in 2012, but the first modern Pro Tour was the very end of 2011.
And the confusion was that Ben was right. I refuse to admit
and
it.
That's really confusing for everyone.
Yes. No, it's 6 years. So in 6 years, we've seen a lot of things happen to modern. Alex and I have done a podcast about this for almost half of the life of the format now, and we have obviously seen trends come and go. So something like Death Shadow, there's been two iterations of a Death Shadow deck, and currently the best deck in the format is a Death Shadow deck, but none of those Death Shadow decks are going to compare to like the top tier decks, ones that have been around for years, ones that have had like many, many, many Grand Prix top eights.
A lot of these have defined Pro Tours. A lot of these have defined GP metagames for years.
Full
some
seasons,
of these have multiple GP wins. Death Shadow has like
banned,
one.
Like,
yeah. So it's a hard contest. I mean, in Death Shadow, making it in the top 30 is still an accomplishment. And
we didn't bother, by the way, looking at like that when he was.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the bottom 10 are not ranked towards each other. So I would rate probably Death Shadow as 21, maybe under Eggs. So maybe Eggs would be 21, and then
yeah.
Death Shadow would be 22.
It's
but
fair.
They're just like all time. So it's like it's not a big accomplishment to be the order that I just listed those isn't a real thing. Don't take that into consideration.
Yeah, and this comes inspired from the fact that
we didn't submit this to the Magic scientists, so they haven't strictly ranked these based
right.
on actual qualifications.
We just attended Grand Prix Vegas 2 weeks ago, and he and I, Alex and I, both played in events that had, you know, our sweet modern brews, and we have been excited about playing a lot of competitive modern recently, and so we wanted to do this episode to kind of frame what we were playing now and what won that Grand Prix, and that's kind of why we decided
sure.
to do this show.
And I think of the list on the bottom end of here, Death Shadow, maybe Lantern Control, and maybe Titan Shift are the three cards that I think have a chance of moving up in the world.
Definitely. They're just a little bit... Like Titan Shift has been around, but it's like a little lower profile. It's like you game plan for it, but like it hasn't blown anybody away yet.
Right.
You know, I think
Death Shadow easily has a potential to be in the top 10. I mean, like, it needs one more GP win, and I'll automatically raise it up.
Being the best deck in the format is,
at
like,
this moment.
Yeah. I mean, we probably are a little low on Death Shadow. It just feels so recent that this version specifically, because the version
it's
of Death
the same
Shadow,
reason I never rank, and I'll never put a movie that's came out in the last year within my top any kind of movie list.
Well, because the version of Death Shadow that was running around before we had these like mid-rangey versions was very good, but it was like a worse version of Affinity Base or of Infect, basically. It was just like, it was just an all-in aggro deck, and like, that's fine, but that wasn't a deck that was the best deck in the format. The version we have now is clearly the best deck in the format, but that's only been 3 to 6 months.
Totally.
And it's really the last three
since
that
the
it's
banning.
Been
yeah,
the
yeah.
best deck.
Yep, I agree. It's funny how a card being banned that was in the deck forced it to become a better deck than it was before.
I know, it's crazy.
It's a great story. All right, so now let's deal with the top 20. Now this we'll talk about each deck a little bit. We're still going to not, you know, it's the top 10 that matters. But you know, we have time, so we're going to go through the top 20 here. Number 20 is like probably the most flash in the panny of any deck on this list. But obviously has its strong potential. Amulet Bloom.
Yeah, this was a deck that, you know, you had Justin Cohen and Sam Black showing up playing. You ended up having Alexander Hain playing this deck for a while. It had, if I remember correctly, at least one Pro Tour top eight. Did this win a Grand Prix, or did it like get close
yes.
to winning a Grand Prix? It did.
I believe it did.
And yeah, this deck still kind of exists, actually. There's a worse version of this deck that plays Azusa that people do still play. It's a thing that actually is powerful still. But the Summer Bloom version of this before Summer Bloom was banned was a deck that kind of came out of nowhere. And I think at first,
I guess it didn't win a GP.
Yeah, I think it just had a couple really
high
finishes.
Like top eighted regularly.
And it had like that Grand Prix or that Pro Tour top eight. Before
yeah,
Pro
where
it
got
gone.
Two top eights and was second place and lost to Blood Moon.
Yes, exactly. And I think the reason this deck sort of was able to exist and that we are ranking it a little higher than, say, like Grishelbrand, is that this deck for a minute was kind of the darling of the Magic scene. There was a lot of discussion that this deck was incredibly difficult to play, and it was sort of took like a mastermind to be able to play it properly. It did all this really cool, weird, broken stuff where you were playing like Bounce Lands and Primeval Titans, and you were getting to transmute Teleria West, use Summoner's Pacts. It was just really cool. I think
and it's one good card away from being playable again. It's like already, it's still fringe. I would say this is a tier 3 to tier 2.5, really. I would even say tier 2.5 deck easy in the format. Like, yeah, you could easily face this at any tournament.
They could print some slightly less powerful version of a Summer Bloom type of card or some other Azusa kind of card, and this deck could skyrocket to powerful again.
Yep. So next, Grixis. Oh, so Emil Bloom had 11 points.
Okay.
Number 20. Grixis, also with 11 points at 19.
Grixis is a weird one for us. We feel a little bad about this because Corey Burkhart, good friend of the show, is a master. Corey Burkhart, I think, is...
And this doesn't include Grixis Death Shadow, which is a different
deck.
Archetype.
This is Grixis Control, the one originally popularized by Chapin and then played to great success by Corey Burkhart in several events. So the deal is, guys, this is a good deck. Corey Burkhart is a generational Magic player, it turns out. Like, we always knew that guy was really good at Magic. It turns out he's, like, one of the best living players, maybe the best living player not to have won a Pro Tour. Because when you can take a deck like Grixis that everybody's like, this is just a worse mid-range deck than the ones we're already playing, and he's like, no, you're wrong. I'm just going to play cards that you're not familiar with and top eight a bunch of times. Like, it just means you're insane at Magic. Now, the cards are there. In the same way Li Shitian played Blue Moon. But, like,
right,
we don't believe that the Grixis control deck is actually...
Yeah, it might be. I mean, now it gets even better, but now it's a Death Shadow deck. Like, Death Shadow makes Grixis Control probably the best deck in the format.
Yes.
But that's not what we're referring to here. This is the counterspell-based version of that deck.
And there was the counterspell-based, but then there was also the tap-out one with, like, Jace Rin's Prodigy and Snapcaster Mage, Kolaghan's
sure.
Command, like, just the heavy value.
Yeah, that's still counter-magic-based. That still was playing multiple Cryptic Commands and...
Yeah, there was versions of this that played no...
With Counter Squall?
No counter spells. There were versions of this that were full tap out. I think Chapin's version may have been full tap out, if I remember.
Sure.
But yeah, anyway. That is Grixis Control coming in at 19th place.
All right, number 18 with 11 points. This is the top of the 11-point bracket. Dredge.
You take it away.
So the reason we put it here and the reason it's so high is, you know, Dredge is a deck that had a card banned out for a long time. So with... Grave Troll not being legal in the format, there's a lot of the history of the format that it wasn't really that good. And when Grave Troll was unbanned, it also still wasn't as important of a deck. What really threw it over the top was Prize Amalgam and the other cards printed in Shadows Over Innistrad block that really changed the game. Now, since then, it has been a tier one, tier 2 point part of the format to the extent that they had to ban a card. So, you know, looking at as a flash in the pan deck versus Amulet Bloom, this is very comparable. The difference is that Amulet Bloom had a card banned out of it and then kind of went away. Well, this is still a tier 1.5 deck in the format and totally a deck that you'd have to worry about in the format any day of the week.
Yeah, I mean, this is as explosive a deck as we've ever seen. It's every bit as explosive as a good Affinity start. It's every bit as explosive as an insane Infect start. Like, this
totally.
Deck can completely house you on turn. I mean, it can be set up to checkmate you on turn 2 very easily, and turn 3 wins with this are not out of the question at all.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, this is a great... The problem with this deck is that it hasn't had that much time legal, and on top of that, it's a very hateable strategy.
Right, it's comparable to Death Shadow, but its relationship with the ban list and its power level at the top of its game... Like, Death Shadow has never had a card required to be banned out of it. Gitaxian Probe wasn't banned because of Death Shadow. That
right.
was a different... The Death Shadow just got accidentally hurt slash made better because of that ban, versus... Dredge, which literally was targeted at the beginning of the format, and then as soon as it was good again, was targeted again with cards banned out of it. So it exists in a slightly different, higher powerful profile position.
Yep.
Next, number 17, Scapeshift.
Different
with 12
than,
points.
Different than Titan Shift.
This different
is,
than Titan Shift. And
Titan
Shift maybe gives it a little bit of points, but the real thing I want is this is the blue version.
Yeah, this is the version that, like, gets to 7 mana and plays its thing and wins. And it holds up its extra 3 mana for its, you know, what was that card called they used to play? Counterflux. This is like the rug version. It's like you would just play like your tribe elders and your ramp spells and you just like would just wreck people.
Yeah, and it's kind of been around the format. There was one point in that it had its heyday, which was during the Delve era. So when
Dig Through Time
really made this a tier 1 deck and was the best deck in the format, and that's when it won a GP. In that time, it's fallen out of favor and fallen into favor, and it kind of goes anywhere. But it's kind of a deck that's always in the format. It's also a card that had a card banned and then was unbanned, and that made it a possible deck and immediately took advantage of it and became a real deck in the format.
Right, right, right.
Next, number 12, point higher 12-point deck. It is number 16, Elves.
Yeah.
This is two GP wins.
Yeah, it's like definitely like a funny I don't fear this deck when I go to a tournament. I don't like think I'm going to have to play against elves.
Do you hear that?
What?
It's the angry scream of on the internet of every elves player.
Well, it's a great deck because you play against this deck when you're unprepared for it and they completely catch you with your pants down. It's a hard deck to play against.
Yep.
And especially that now that there's like the, what's the black green origins elf where you lose life equal to the number of elves you have when it comes with three drops?
Sure.
Prowess of the Fair. No, that's a different card.
No, it's not the
Warden
card.
Of the Fair or something.
I couldn't tell you what the name of it is. You're asking me for the name of a card?
That's a good point.
That's my one weakness on a Magic podcast about knowing the name of cards.
Can't think of the name of that card. But
I think it's even better now with the Devoted Druid combo, to be totally honest. It's been playing that a lot. And it's a deck that was already built to take advantage of making absurd amount of mana with creatures. And Devoted Druid sides right into that because it's an elf. So I think... at a bare minimum, that helps the deck, and maybe this is a higher deck than we're giving it credit for right now, but easily two GP wins gets you in the top 20. It is kind of a lower tier on that end, but I definitely think it deserves its spot.
Yeah, it's a super linear deck, and it is not very hard if you want to hate it out to beat it.
Historically, it doesn't have the same level of importance as some of the higher decks that are also very linear.
Yeah, it doesn't pop into my mind when I'm like, oh, I'll just take this deck and it'll just like crush people. It's right. Like you have to kind of catch it on a good weekend.
Next, and a lot of its power comes from early modern, but it has always been a thing. Straight Zoo. Number 12 points, top of the 12-point bracket, number 15.
Yeah, going back to the beginning, this is one of the best decks. Straight up. It's the very beginning of modern, and it's shown up over the years. I mean, the unbanning of Nacatl made this a thing again. It was out of the format for a long time with the banning of Nacatl.
Well, in the first 6 months of Modern, it was top three decks easy.
It was Countercat. It was the deck.
Not even just Countercat. There was a point where Wild Nacatl, what's the machine gun red guy that combos with the land?
Machine gun red guy that combos
two
with
damage
the
land. When an opponent gains life, play red man, bring it back.
Two damage when an opponent... Oh, not a guy. A card, you mean.
Yeah.
Grover the Burnwell is with Punishing Fire?
Punishing Fire, thank you. Yeah. Like when there was Bloodbraid Elf, Punishing Fire, and Wild Nacatl... all in Modern at the same time, this deck was maybe the best deck in the format. They had to ban two cards out of it at the same time.
I mean, that's just like a very oppressive and unfair thing people were doing.
Sure.
So.
Well, I mean, I would argue that a lot of the decks that have bans here like were degenerate and deserve to be banned.
Agreed.
But, I mean, both Eldrazi, and we already talked about Dredge and Amulet Bloom. But that's true then. Then, you know, it's Naya... there was a big Naya period when Nacatl was in the format. Nacatl came back, and now Zoo has always been kind of a part of the format. Right now, it's not at its strongest, but Death Shadow was a Zoo deck. First, Death Shadow Zoo was a black Zoo deck.
And then you'll see this show up. Coco Zoo is a thing people play. I've played against that plenty of times.
Totally.
Like Knight of the Reliquary. It's like all the good green cards.
So I was talking about the Knight of the Reliquary. I think this was during the GP was saying that Knight of the Reliquary is the least played good card in Modern.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. I forget who that was. Was it?
I don't remember.
Jason Ault?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yep. All right. Number 14 with 13 points. It's close to matching. This is the bottom of the 13-point bracket. Jeskai Control. So this has won two GPs. So, like, you'll notice that winning two GPs definitely brings you up on the list. Zoo has also won, I think, two GPs. I'm going to look to
this is also a deck,
crazy.
By the way. Jeskai Control. There's a recent version of Jeskai Control that's been showing up with four Logic Knots in the main deck.
I love Logic Knot. By the way, Logic Knot is maybe the most underrated counterspell in the format. It's probably the best one.
And so this could raise... This could
that costs less than Cryptic Command.
This could rise up higher on the list pretty easily if that Logic Knot version we're talking about like has a couple of really good showings at Grand Prix. I would not get Grand Prix. I would not be surprised if Jeskai started to get close to breaking the top 10.
Sure.
Because, you know, this has been a good deck for a long time. The issue with this deck has just been that, like, it's been good, and then the format kind of shifts, and it's like, it just doesn't play a kind of magic that is that powerful. It's very interactive with creatures, but if you're going against non-creature decks, it doesn't do as much as you want it to do.
And this includes like the hashtag Team Geist Jeskai decks and everything. But the problem with Jeskai and blue-white control in general is the more stable a format is, the better the deck is going to be. And Modern has not really had a super stable metagame for a long period of time. One of my best, you know, early, one of the reasons I got into Modern in the first place is one of my early finishes with it that was good was with a straight blue-white control list and played it right before Bloodbraid Elf was banned. knew, like, matchup was great. Jund matchup was great. Wall of Omens is real good against Blood Raid Elf. I knew exactly what I was doing. They banned Blood Raid Elf in the next tournament. I got smoked because I had no idea what decks I was supposed to be preparing for.
Well, it's because this is a, okay, essentially this is Jeskai Flash. That's what this deck has been. And the deal with it is you're either going to go heavier with more, like, with more counter magic, or you're going to go heavier with more creature removal. And if you pick the wrong half of it in the wrong tournament, this deck just fails.
I mean, more than anything, what this deck is really Snapcaster Mage with four Lightning Bolt and four Lightning Helix, and then other good blue-white cards.
Yep. Totally.
And whatever those are at the time, Geist sometimes, you know, Path of the Exile is almost always there.
Restoration
out of
Angel.
Counter magic.
I've played against people.
Delver.
People play Sphinx's Rev as a one or two of sometimes in this deck.
Totally. I mean, I've played many different versions of this deck. But yeah. Next, number 13. And this is the only thing with I think this is the only thing in the entire list that has the same amount of points at the same spot. 13 points at number 13. It's kind of the middle. Storm.
Right. Storm, the ultimate, I want to win a Grand Prix and show up just like and smoke people if I'm a pro deck. That's like what this deck is. This is a deck.
I mean, this is the ultimate, like, there's not a single deck in modern history that has had more cards banned out from under it.
Right. This is lost now. Seething Song, Gitaxian Probe.
Well, starting it lost.
Ponder, Preordain.
And Fire.
Oh, yeah. Rite of Flame.
Rite of Flame.
And Seething Song and Gitaxian Probe.
Seething Song, Gitaxian Probe. Yeah. It's like kind of crazy how many cards have been banned out of Splinter. Like as a if I was a Storm player, I would feel so beaten consistently. Not to mention Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time.
That's a good point. Yeah, and it continues to just put up results because you know they printed Baral, which makes this deck better.
Yeah, they're always going to print cards that make this deck slightly better. And the question is, how does a Storm card deck player figure out how to be good? Like Storm is good right now.
Yeah, the reason Storm gets to be close to the top 10 is because in the early days, this deck didn't play Electromancer. And then it started playing Electromancer because it needed the acceleration because it was losing its big mana accelerants.
Yep.
And now it plays Baral and Electromancer because it's even better and you don't get Gitaxian Probes. You need to be able to play the better spells for cheaper.
Totally.
And, you know, that's what the deck does now. And it just continues to be good.
Yeah. I think in Magic's history, they're going to always have trouble getting rid of the deck that's just like, how many spells can I cast in one turn?
And I think they will always regret printing Storm in the first place.
But even without Storm cards, there are other effects, I think, in Magic that, like, well, it's in Standard right now. You would just play Aetherworks, not Aetherworks Reservoir, but every time you cast a spell, gain a life, you know, equal to how many spells you've cast that turn, and then you can pay 50 life to kill a player.
Aetherworks Reservoir.
I'm literally in Standard killing people. It is Aetherworks Reservoir.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Oh, it's Reservoir, and then there's Marvel. Yeah, Aetherworks Reservoir. I literally have a Standard deck right now that is a Storm deck, because they're just going to always have cards like that.
Well, and also, like, let's be honest, there's enough things that we were talking about this last week on our episode that trigger off of instant or sorceries that, like, you can win off of lots of things. You can win off of having a Kiln Fiend in play and winning. You can win off of having a young Pyromancer and effects that, like, double down on haste plus.
Or just, like, stuff like Gutter Snipe.
You win with Gutter Snipe. Yep. Yeah. There's, if you can cast seven spells in a turn,
you're going to find a way to win with it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, even in fact, like, John Finkel is on the record saying that Infect is the best
Storm deck
in modern.
It's the best combo deck.
No, like, because it's about, at that point, it was literally about how many spells can I cast in one turn.
Right.
And it was like, pump, 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 I win. And that's like what, it played like Storm did. It's just you had to have a creature attacking at the same time.
Yeah.
All right, next. Number 12 with 13 points as well. Abzan.
Straight
like
Abzan.
Junk Abzan. Yeah, Abzan
so,
midrange.
This is a weird one. This is one of Grand Prix. It's traditionally referred to and thought of as a 1.5 version of regular Jund. It's the closest thing to the Jund deck.
Sometimes it's better than Jund.
It had a period of time of about 6 months to a year where Siege Rhinos were running around, and it after
there
the
was
bang,
yeah, there was
right
one point where it was strictly better, but before Colligan's Command was printed, where it was just Siege Rhino made the deck a better deck.
And you showed up, and the mid-range deck to play that the pros all played was Abzan, and it was during the time of Birthing Pod. Some people would just play the straight mid-range Abzan deck. Mm-hmm. People just liked playing this deck.
Well, and especially once Birthing Pod was banned, Abzan became kind of the go-to deck.
Yeah, because Lingering Souls really became the card. You know, there was the four-color Jund decks in the transition that people played, and it was that idea that, like,
Deathrite Shaman was still around and allowed you to fix your mana.
It was like, Lingering Souls is just so good. Oh, why don't we just play the deck that makes this easier to cast?
Sure.
And that was kind of where we were. And it's a fairly uninteresting deck, and it's funny. Voice of Resurgence was played in this deck. It's just good. It's just value.
Yep.
Just straight-up value.
Totally. Yeah, it does really powerful things. And now, you know, the difference is that it has the options that Jund does with Lingering Souls and Grim Flayer.
Path to Exile is a really good card.
And and it's really Path to Exile or Bolden, which one's better at the time. And now, with Fatal Push, that conversation becomes even more difficult.
Yeah, definitely.
Eldrazi, number 11.
We call this Eldrazi because it refers to a couple different things. So
everything from Mardu Eldrazi with Corbin all the way to Eldrazi Winter and Bant Eldrazi and White Black Eldrazi. It's
Eldrazi
kind of a big...
Yeah, I mean, the Eldrazi, the really powerful Eldrazi cards that make this what it is have not been around very long. Oath of the Gatewatch is like a year and a half old or something, right? 2 years old? Year and a half.
Year and a half.
And, you know, friend of the podcast, Andrew Brown, top eight at a Pro Tour. You know, JC won a Pro Tour. This completely dominated and took over Modern for an entire season.
As far as its Modern Pro Tour finish, there is nothing paralleled, I think, in the history of the Pro Tour to what Modern Eldrazi did.
Yeah, and then it showed up and just smoked a Grand Prix. I mean, it was totally
unfair.
Wasn't it
Magic. 7 out of the 8 decks were Eldrazi decks?
Like 6 of them, I think. But yeah, it was like, it did really, really, really unfair things in a way that Wizards just did not anticipate. And, you know, it was the fastest, most broken kind of Magic. And honestly, for the time it was around, it was awesome. That's the one deck. Now you have Bant Eldrazi, which is a very good deck. You have Eldrazi and Taxes, which is kind of like a Hate Bears hybrid. You've got Eldrazi Tron, which is top 8 at a Grand Prix last weekend. You've got, or 2 weekends ago.
Multiple weekends since.
Yeah.
Eldrazi Tron's been a thing.
The bottom line is that, you know, You still have a soul land you can play that refers to a really good 4/4 and a really good 5/5 and two value 3 drops, and that's enough. People can find value. That's 16 playable creatures in your creature slots with a soul land that gets you faster towards casting them, and it's not like Noble Hierarch's not a good card. So in general, this is a good thing to be doing, and I think the reason it's so high for us is that it had one season that it was dominant, and it continues to run around. This will probably raise higher as we go forward.
It single-handedly broke an entire format, and then, like, Dredge is high. One of the reasons, because it survived its banning process.
Right.
And this is a deck that definitively did that.
Definitely.
All right, number 10.
Top 10,
everybody. Now we're gonna talk pretty much a little bit more for each deck, I think. All right, with 14 points, bottom of the 14 bracket, very much focused on one drop. That sometimes slips into a 3-2, covers multiple color combinations, including blue-red, Rug, Jeskai, and Grixis. We got Delver.
Yeah, and this is a really weird one, I think, because, okay, Delver's a great card. Delver is not the definitive card within these archetypes, because the archetypes we're talking about that use Delver are very different decks. Teemer Delver and Grixis Delver are very different decks.
Right. It has won multiple GPs. 3, I believe,
yeah. Yeah.
Including the Grixis one. So a Grixis GP and then two other, I think there's a Rug Delver one and a blue-red. Like part of the reason this gets thrown up so high is because of the Delve era.
During the Treasure Cruise summer, blue-red Delver and...
That was a fall, but sure.
Yeah, but that was pretty clearly just the best deck.
Or autumn, if you want to be fancy.
Okay, look at you.
Hey, you're the one actually wearing a suit right now.
It's a big surprise, guys.
Did you... do anything but hang out at the offices of Kesko?
I had to come from an event last night.
Okay, so this is what you wore yesterday.
Yes. What did I do last night that I had to wear a suit?
We're all judging
for?
You.
I like don't even
so
remember.
You're literally have presented yourself at work all day in a walk of shame outfit?
Kind of. I don't remember what I did yesterday. I'm like just having a complete
stroke. We did our spoiler card.
Yep, I'm having a stroke. Oh, I recorded Action Movie Anatomy yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And I went and I stayed with my girlfriend, and that's why I didn't go home. I came here.
Yeah.
They're clean clothes. Shut up.
I'm just, you know, didn't even think he needed to change his outfit. It's okay. I wore these jeans yesterday, too.
It's a tuxedo.
Is it actually a tuxedo?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Very impressed.
I like this jacket. Yeah. All right. Let's keep talking.
All right. Delver Secrets. Top 10. A midpoint between the top 20 and top 10 outfit conversation.
It's one of my favorite cards of all time, Delver Secrets. I love this card. I mean, so the one thing is that even though I wouldn't call it the definitive card, like it's not like it's the card that makes these decks run. If you take this card away, these just shift into similar strategies.
It's tempo.
Yeah.
The difference is that statement because Grixis without Delver is a control deck.
Yep.
Or at best a mid-range deck. Jeskai without Delver is a control deck, maybe a burn deck. Like, these decks aren't... Jeskai's maybe the closest because you can play, like, the Geist versions that have other tempo versions without Delver. But the unifying factor is they're about play a card on one, turn one, and then don't let it die and don't let your opponent do anything until it kills them.
I believe Chapin's original Grixis deck was referred to as Delverless Delver, if I recall. When he announced it, then we had him on here talking about it. I think that was what he called it. So, you can't, without Delver, these decks morph into something else. It's not the only card, but it's a very important card towards unifying these strategies.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And during Blue-Red, that Eldrazi, or
oh, sorry, it's 1-3. So one Grixis Delver and two Rug Delvers have won.
Yeah, during that Delver stretch, the blue red stretch. You had to have this card. Without this card, that deck didn't work.
Totally.
So anyway, that is
when we get into this conversation of the other top 10, this is one, two, three, four, five decks that have won 3 or more GPs. Period.
Yeah.
So like that's part of its reason of being in the top 10. If you've won 3 or more GPs, you deserve to be in the top 10 decks of all time.
Yep.
Hands down.
Number 8. Right?
Yeah.
All right.
No, number 9.
Okay.
That was 10. Number 10.
Sweet.
It also has 14 points. So this is what we rated above Delver for 14 points.
Sick.
This has 2 GP wins, maybe 3 if I'm completely forgetting one since 2017 started, and I don't think I am, so I think it's 2. Fan favorite of people like Corbin Hauser, the professor. You got Hostler?
Hostler.
I apologize, Corbin. And a lot of fish. It's Merfolk.
Everyone loves Merfolk. It's funny.
Merfolk is the most behated best deck in the format in the sense that it is, every time I've ever had a conversation with a pro player about Merfolk, they like hate on it, but then it just like within a month later has won a GP every time they've done it.
Yeah, I think they like roll their eyes. I recall like, who was it? Was it Andrew Brown who rolled his eyes?
Yeah, Andrew Brown. Andrew Brown, I think, literally rolled his eyes and then it won that GP.
And then it won the Grand Prix.
Yeah, that same day.
it's really powerful. This deck is, because this deck is not only an aggressive deck, but it also, because of the card spreading seas, has the ability to severely disrupt your game plan while making its game plan better. And that's a thing that is like terrifying. Some decks, when you go against a Merfolk deck and they beat you in game one, you sit there just being like, okay, I have to side into X, Y, or Z plan. And they're like, but what if they hit Spreading Seas on me on turn 2? Then I can't play my sideboard card that's harder to cast. Or like, what if they just get the start that they want and I like kill one creature? Like, this deck is super resilient because because it goes so wide and it's like immediately attacking for 16.
Yeah, we've done a lot of testing with this deck because it's one of the decks I have fully built and it, one of the 12, it is super resilient and aggressive. Like, obviously the hands of just like, I have every creature removal spell in the format, wreck it, but it just like with Mutavault, there's like so many different things that it does that are really powerful.
It's the only 4 of Aether Vial deck in Modern that's a real deck.
And that's part of it. Aether Vial is a really powerful card and this is just the best deck to take advantage of it, because when you have 8 lords,
12, right?
Well, no, 8 lords at 2 mana.
Yeah.
4 card draw 2/1s at 2 mana.
Yeah.
Like, 2 mana starts doing a lot.
Yeah, it's
not to mention
really
a bounce spell at 2 mana, a lock, a creature down, a Tarmogoyf down creature at 2 mana. Like, it does a lot of really powerful things.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. You know what's better than getting away to a beach? Getting together at the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. They've got over 2,000 restaurants, live music playing all day and night, and endless attractions. This place was made for playing hard and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 Miles Where You Belong. The beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
A new equation for switching on outcomes is here from PwC. It's human-led and tech-powered. It's PwC with Oracle, SAP, Salesforce, and Workday. It's PwC with Microsoft, AWS, and Google. Simplify your systems and amplify your results. Switch on outcomes with PwC and their alliances. Learn more at pwc.com.
No matter what you're looking for in a non-alcoholic beer, there's only one name that has it all. Athletic Brewing Co. Full flavor? It's athletic. Huge variety? It's athletic. Award-winning styles you can get online, at the bar, or the grocery store? It's athletic. In fact, when it comes to amazing non-alcoholic beer, there's no question. It's athletic. Ask for it and find out. Go to askforathletic.com to find your closest retailer today. Near beer.
Yeah, six. And then like the top end now being Master of Waves.
Yeah, well, then that's the other half. It's like it's a, has a Fatal Push resistant, Lightning Bolt proof 2/1 that creates a bunch of 1/2s or 2/1s yeah. with it is like an insane card.
Yeah, really good.
Next up,
Abzan Company. So this is a funny one to me because we've taught we when one rating our top three or four, Abzan Company came up not in contention for those slots, but because it was my argument for why what I believe is one of the best decks of the format deserves to be the best deck of the format that we'll get in a little bit more. But Abzan Company is obviously great. Since it's existed, it's been a you know, Coco itself has spawned multiple decks.
Right.
And Elves exist because of Coco.
I think it's important for us to note that, like, if you are saying to yourself, isn't this and, like, pre-Birthing Pod banning this kind of the same deck, they've both had so much success that we had to separate them.
Yes, two different separately, decks. They're both in the top 10 decks.
And they play a lot of the same
if
cards.
They were, if we were the same deck, they would literally be the best deck in the format. And one of them, well, we'll get there. Yeah. But Abzan Company, very powerful. Multiple, you know, like it's won multiple GPs. It consistently has the thing of just the best three and below drops, one of the best combos. It combines being an aggressive deck with being a combo deck in the perfect kind of way you want it to combine. And yeah, it's just really good.
Yeah,
it's a really testament good. To how good some of these cards are.
Sick.
I don't know how much more we can say about Abzan Coco. Oh, it has 15 points.
Yeah.
It is this bottom of the 15-point bracket. Next in the 15-point bracket, this is a classic strategy. This strategy has been around since the beginning of Magic. Literally since the beginning, because there was a point where there wasn't the 4-of rule in Magic, and so you could literally play a deck with 10 islands, or right. 12, you know, 18 mountains and 32 lightning bolts, or whatever the deck limit was. It's Burn.
Yeah, and this has always been good. There's various versions. There's been Naya Burn, which is probably the most prominently played now.
Naya Burn has spent the longest time at the top of the Burn heap. I think it's now going on 2.5 years.
Right.
And before that, there was Mono Red Burn, and there was Naya. Boros Burn.
Yeah.
There was Black Red Burn. There was like the Burn with Bob and the Black
Bump in the Night.
Bump in the Night.
Yeah, I think it was like Mardu. I think that was like there's a Mardu.
There's
version.
A Mardu version. So there's been other versions, but I think like Naya Burn has been the Burn deck. Period. Like for a while now.
Well, there was a couple cards. There's just been a few cards printed that have really done that. And I actually think, honest to God, I think Destructive Revelry is one of the big cards that got
totally.
Printed that pushed this into green, because that card ended up being such an important factor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's been splashing green forever because of that reason.
Yeah.
Not Colgan's Command, sorry.
Atarka's Command.
Atarka's Command yeah. just threw it straight into just green, black, green, white, red are yep. the three best colors.
Because this deck really does want to have Path to Exile. In its deck. It wants, I mean...
It wants...
Boros Charm. But it also wants...
It plays some paths on the side. It's really Boros Charm in the main, and then you have Lightning Helix on the side, are like the two big
yes,
reasons
but,
for
but
it.
This deck, anytime I've ever played against this deck and I've gotten tricked, or it's like gotten me, it's because it brings in its Path to Exiles.
Sure.
And that's how it gets rid of your Firewalker, is that they don't care, and they're like, I'll just
path
to your
it.
Creature.
Sure.
And that's the thing that they end up winning with.
I've seen more Skullcracks against... them
yes
that's been my core Firewalker murder.
I made that mistake this week. It was stupid.
Skullcrack's a good card.
I didn't realize that it took away the protection.
Yeah, but I mean, this strategy will always be good. There's always going to be an amalgamation of great ways of killing a player with damage directly to their face, and just yeah, that's welcome to Magic. This is one of probably the four most iconic ways of playing Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, you have Lightning Bolt. It's been a good card forever.
Yep. Number six, with 15 points at the top of the 15-point pile, I'm pretty sure has a 0 win rate against number 7 for all intents and purposes. But otherwise, red-green Tron.
This can't beat Burn. Cannot beat Burn.
I think if I wanted to, I could beat Burn.
There's been a lot of versions of Tron. Tron's been good forever. This is the best one, though. This is the simple one. This is the elegant one.
The way it beats Burn is it gets a turn 3 Wormcoil Engine.
Yeah, this is the... Expedition Map, Pyroclasm, Sylvan Scrying, Oblivion Stone, Karn, Ugin, just
red-green being the best version historically.
Grove of the Burn Willows.
Grove of the Burn Willows.
This is a very iconic deck in Modern's history.
Yeah.
It's been.
It's never won a GP. It's high, though, because this is a deck that's actually specifically bad at GPs. But it is such an iconic and important pillar of the format.
And it's been the deck that so many different times I can remember going to an event or a PTQ and somebody being like, oh, you really got to watch out for Tron. Like, that's the deck. Like, this has been the deck to fear for, like, periods of time, long periods of time.
It's also, like, it's the big anti-fair deck. And if you look at our top five, two of those have, like, strictly just lost to Tron. And there are two eras where both of those decks were the best deck in the format. This, I would also say, if we wanted to smush Locust lands...
Oh, Cloud Post?
Cloud Post, maybe a little bit.
12 Post?
Yeah, 12 Post, a little bit into the bottom of this category.
In the very beginning.
In the very beginning, because like Tron is literally that deck.
Just the less good version.
Less good version. Like if Cloud Post, Tron wouldn't be a deck, because Cloud Post, and then the format would be bad, because that format sounds awful.
Yeah.
But Tron's just really good. There's other versions. There's blue-white. I think the most popular after red-green is blue. I've seen... not maybe the second best of the different options, but I think the most popular second place is blue, probably because it does other fun things. But
yeah,
red-green is just red-green Tron is one of the best decks in the format.
I've seen black Tron, I've seen white Tron. People have played all versions.
Number five with 16 points. This is the only one in the 16-point bracket. This is definitively the fifth best deck in Modern.
According to those scientists.
According to these super scientists. They didn't even need to go to committee. This is straight up was going to be fifth place no matter what we did. In fact.
So much worse now than it has been, but a card that took advantage of the fact that it played the most broken Delve spell left for a long time. And just has been
even
good.
Without that, like in fact was a tier 1.5 deck since Modern existed, starting with Blazing Shoal. Like
yeah, it's true.
Blazing Shoal in fact was top 8 of the first Modern Pro Tour, and since then there's been an Infect deck there, as we said earlier.
Arilax.
Nope.
John Finkel
said this is the best Storm deck in Modern.
I remember, I definitely remember reading the first articles when, I think it was Arilax was the guy who was popularizing this in the very beginning when it started to pick up. And I remember reading his articles about it and thinking like, oh yeah, I get it. This is cute. And then people were like, oh yeah, Ari did well with that. Or like, oh, a few people did really well with that deck. It's starting to pick up. And then all of a sudden it was like, yeah, that's a real deck. Oh, enter Become Immense. That deck's insane.
Yeah.
Like, that deck's really unfair. And
well, when they banned every Delve spell... but Delve was still really powerful. That Modern Pro Tour where they banned all those, like literally that's where Gurmag Angler came from. That's when Tassigar started seeing play.
Yeah.
And that's when Infect became a huge part of the format. Because before then, Infect was bad against Snapcaster, Lightning Bolt, Treasure Cruise decks. It's really hard to beat that level of value when you're an Infect deck. But as soon as those went away and it had this whole Delve world available to it, it became just a monster.
Yeah, very, 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 very good.
Next. Are we good? Are we
next this? Up. Yep.
I do. Well, what's your thought? Do you think Infect has a chance of becoming good again?
With
Fatal Push and Gitaxian Probe, both one leaving and one entering?
I think Infect is still a really good deck. I think probably like what happened to Grixis Shadow is that like if Infect wanted to become a good deck again, I think it would take somebody reimagining the play pattern. I think that the play pattern, the way it worked, the sort of counting your spells and assuming what your opponent had, but trying to get there in like those first few turns before your opponent could really set up, I think it becomes a much more like you play much more like answer centric. I don't think you're trying to win with like one big turn.
I mean, like something I was thinking about earlier today, and we mentioned a Junt version on the podcast, but doing a Junt. Or even maybe Grixis, the pump spells you lose are probably too much. But going Jund where you play, Plague Stinger.
Yeah.
Instead of the unblockable one that I'm not remembering off the top of my head. And you get four Thoughtseize.
Blighted Agent.
You get four Thoughtseize. And you get our spoiler card from, Claim to Fame, where you can start bringing back these cards that Fatal Push is killing, plus giving them the pump of +2/+0. And you get some pretty decent pump spells in red.
Yeah,
I think you start putting together a deck that's really interesting.
Well, I think our spoiler card that we just premiered would be pretty sick to try to find a way to play in this deck. Claim to Fame, right? Don't you think?
Yeah. I just said it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I did the thing.
You did the thing!
Yeah.
It's not only me. I'm not the only one with crazy ADD.
Yeah, I think that probably the Infect deck that becomes a deck is playing it as a tempo deck as opposed to playing it as an all-in combo deck, because what you're effectively doing is like, why is Delver of Secrets good? Delver of Secrets is good because it represents roughly 1/7 of somebody's life total on one swing, and it's evasive.
Sure.
Well, a 1/1 infect creature is a 2/2 for one. Mm-hmm. So if you figure out a way that you have to connect a few times, and if you pump a couple times, even a little bit, you don't have to attack very many times. And I think that that's where this deck probably goes, is it becomes tempo-y rather than all in. But sure. I think you can still be all in. It's just a little bit.
That's why I'm saying go Jund a little bit, because by going Jund, you get Thoughtseize. And Thoughtseize replaces Gitaxian Probes in many ways.
Yeah.
And is probably better because you rip the removal spell out of their hand if they have it. And it also allows you to play our spoiler cards. So you can rebuy a thing. I think Plague Stinger is not much worse. It's definitely worse than Blighted Agent, but I think it offers something. The other way to go is Grixis, but you have to figure out a way to replace the pump spells. And I think there's a way to do that. It's just as you lose your one drop, and you have to use red pump spells, which are significantly worse, but not that much worse.
I honestly, when I think about the version of this that I would want to build, it's much closer to the Glistener Elf, like tempo-y, play Rancors and have tempo spells.
Sure. I think bringing Rancors back is also an interesting idea.
Yeah, that seems like a good thing. So anyway, that's number four, right?
Yep.
No,
number five.
That was five?
Yep.
Well, I thought the number five deck was
In fact.
All right, sick.
Number four with 17 points, bottom of the 17 bracket. This is the last bracket before everything was very much the card it was. Has been probably one of the best decks of the format of all time, though hasn't won a GP since Bloodbraid Elf was banned. This is Jund.
Yeah, Jund, an old favorite, a pro favorite.
And once again, Death Shadow Jund doesn't count.
Yeah, this is traditional mid-range Jund. So this was dominant for a long time, always top-aided Pro Tours.
Shadow was the best deck in the format by a wide margin. By a wide margin.
Shadow lost in the finals against Stanislav Sifka, a Pro Tour return to Ravnica. This has been a Bloodbraid Elf Deathrite Shaman deck. This adapted and played other cards.
It started with Bloodbraid Elf and Deathrite Shaman. It originally started with the combo we were talking about earlier with Blazing Shoal. 2 damage from the graveyard.
Yes, Punishing Fire.
Punishing Fire. But that evolved, got banned. Then Bloodbraid Elf got banned, and then we moved into the Deathrite Shaman era, where it kind of became a 4-color to 5-color deck, where it was playing Lingering Souls and a Johnny Vengeance instead of Bloodbraid Elf at its top end. And even before that, it started playing Lingering Souls, because in the mirror match, Lingering Souls is really good against Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah.
And then Deathrite Shaman got banned, because it was very stifling on the format. And then from that point on, Jund has... at one point became Junk more than Jund. We talked about that already.
What was that long period of time where it didn't play Bob? What was was that this deck that didn't play Bob?
Yeah.
Or was it that Abzan didn't play Bob? This deck
Abzan definitely never. Abzan didn't play Bob. Jund has always played some amount of Bobs, but Abzan was the real one that...
Because they didn't want to flip Rhino because they played so many Rhinos?
Rhino and Tasigur.
Oh, that's right. They didn't want to do it because of Tasigur. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Because Tasigur is really good because you can get Lingering Souls and other good things, yeah.
I think Jund has just always been good, and it's a super fair deck. I mean, pros always felt like they could get 52% if they played this deck.
Yep.
And it's not even like that specific of a strategy. It's like you can kind
6
of
6 to 8 discard spells for Liliana of the Veil or the other one.
Four
Tarmogoy, four Bob, some amount of Scavenging Ooze, somewhere around 12 removal spells.
Four
the
Bolt
deck.
Being 4 of them. Yeah.
Either 4 Bolt or 4 Fatal Push or a combination of those with some Terminates, probably a Maelstrom Pulse.
And 2-ish of your 4 drops.
2 to 4 4 drops.
Yeah. Cletus these days.
It hasn't been Cletus in a while. Now it's weird, but, you know.
But it was Cletus for a long time.
Cletus,
it was
Kieran
Masters,
and Pian for a while. Chandra, 4-mana Chandra is, I think, now kind of the standard one.
Olivia.
Olivia Valdarin is always the standard one. Huntmaster is a big one. Bloodbraid Elf.
Yeah.
A Johnny Vengeance.
Yeah, lots of good ones.
Yep. So that's Jund, all in a nutshell.
Yep.
Or a Jund shell?
No.
Chestnuts roasting on it.
Now who's having
open
a
fire?
Now who's having a stroke?
Number three, top of the 17 bracket. This is originally Ben's pick probably for best deck in the format.
Yeah, I was trying to make a strong argument.
And that is the winner of GP Vegas, Affinity.
Yeah, three of the top four decks in GP Vegas Affinity. Here's my argument.
Second most GP wins of any deck.
I got argued out of this, but my point was basically that the format started, and from the time it started until now, this has been a deck that could absolutely crush you out of nowhere, high 70% win percentage game one if it was on the play against you. And it's never had a card ban because it's never been oppressive or unfair to the point that, like, people were worried. People have talked about it, but it's always been right on that edge of fair. And to me, that represents a couple things. It represents the exact kind of balance of power, the elegance that you want out of a top-tier deck. And it's just the fact that it's been so consistent for so long, and it's changed forms. You know, people have tried cards here and cards there, but it always comes back, to me, is what I think, and the fact that four Grand Prix now. But I get it. It's not a deck that if you're prepared for it, you have a problem with. And the top decks, if you were prepared for them, they could still crush you.
Death Shadow, Dredge, Zoo, Storm, Eldrazi, Abzan, Delver, Abzan Company, and then the next two decks above it, Jund, and maybe even Infect, have all been the best deck in the format. Affinity has never been once the best deck in Modern.
Yeah, it's always been like what are the top few decks in Modern?
It's always like a deck you could play. Top three or top totally, five. It is a consistently good deck that if the metagame was focusing on the wrong other deck that the hate didn't really cross into your world, you're gonna have a great day.
And
more GPs than any other deck but one. Obviously very strong, classic. Like I definitely think it belongs in the top three. I even could say that maybe it belongs in the top two, but I definitely don't think it's the best deck.
I would say that one of the big reasons that it's even despite it still gets to be a top three or top five all-time deck in anybody's book is because a lot of the decks you're talking about, a single Leyline of the Void, for instance, just ends you. Or like, whereas like...
I can name 12 artifact hate cards right now that make it so Affinity can't beat you.
What, like Shatterstorm you mean? Or Shattering Spree you mean?
There's two.
So, but remember, with
there's
Affinity,
the Replicate one, there's...
Yeah, Shattering Spree. You have to draw...
Ancient Grudge,
yeah,
there's
okay.
Stony
but single,
Silence.
But a single Ancient Grudge doesn't end Affinity.
Stony Silence ends it.
Pretty close to it. So I think, yeah, definitely, there's hate cards.
But Leyline of Sanctity, yes, ends something. Leyline of Void and Rest of Peace end some of these things. But like a Leyline, and there's Graveyard Hate that hates a lot of these decks out. It doesn't kill Jund. It doesn't.
It's
like,
fair. I would still.
And Dredge is way lower than this. I'm not saying Affinity isn't more resilient than some of these other decks, but I think Affinity.
Unchecked, the other decks we're talking about haven't just like repeatedly.
Affinity
just...
is like you're talking about these other decks is like, oh, these other decks are decks that like are classically able to be hated out of the format. Affinity is literally the deck people talk about when they talk about a deck that could be hated out of the format.
But you're talking about all these other decks that have like a similarly high power level that have been left unchecked. Well, Storm doesn't just win four Grand Prix. Like the other ones you're talking about.
And they're all lower than Affinity.
So I'm saying. That's why I think Affinity. Affinity's.
I definitely think Affinity belongs in the top five, four, and three decks in the format.
Yeah, I would argue that it's right on the edge of being as good or
I
better.
I could see Jund being better than Affinity, and if Jund had won a Grand Prix in the last 2 years, I would maybe give it, but it didn't. So
the
I agree
that three
Affinity
of the top four at this last Grand Prix, to me, is like a pretty good reminder
but
of how good
this
deck is.
That's a sign more that everyone was really high on Graveyard Hate. Yeah. And counter company hate, and was really low on Affinity hate.
All right, fair enough.
Affinity wins when people forget about it.
Yeah, but when they forget about it, it wins. It doesn't just top eight or do it like doesn't just do well. It wins the Grand Prix. That's the difference.
But, sure,
that's
but
what
it
I'm
it just
say.
Has had more time to be put in that position. I think Dredge is in the exact same.
Yeah,
because
nothing's been banned because it's always been on the edge.
But Dredge started banned.
Yeah, I've made my point. This is third, and I think it could easily be in the same conversation as the others.
All right, number two.
Yep.
Oh, we're good on time. Number two with 19 points. That means you rated it with a 10, and I rated it with a 9.
Yep.
By the way, I rated Affinity with an 8, and Ben rated it with a 9. I rated Jund with a 9, and Ben rated it with an 8. And I rated it with a 9. You rated it with a 7.
Hmm.
Those are the ratings. Splitter Twin. 19 points.
I like feel like this should be the number one deck of all time, and you talked me out of it based on statistics.
You and my crazy uncle, we got in a very long argument about a political thing, and he was like, ignore all of the numbers you're using to prove me wrong. Emotionally, do you feel this way? I'm like, the numbers prove you wrong. Math wins always. Math isn't okay, continue.
I think, you know, it's obviously very close. I think you guys all probably know where we're going with the number one, but Splinter Twin, I mean, look, this deck has suffered all every different season, every different idea, every different take until it was banned, and it always represented the sort of it always represented the exact place that I think we all thought the format should be living. And it's, I think now looking back, it's, I guess it's fine that it's banned. The format's in a great place, and the format, I think this deck being banned has opened up more diversity. I don't know. I still love this deck, and I think if this was legal, I don't think it ruins the format. It just definitely makes it the higher level. People want to play something they're comfortable with. And the issue with this deck is it's effectively a Grixis control deck or a blue-red control deck with just 8 Pokemon cards is what that's like what they used to say, Andrew and those guys, when they were like brewing. They'd be always like, yeah, you just like play your regular control deck, and then you just like draw your fake magic cards and win. And it's true. And that's why this deck was good.
Yeah, there's a part of me that looks at our top 10 deck lists and like, this is a modern format that existed. All these decks, none of them are super new. We resisted, you know, we don't have many of them, but like Delver, Merfolk, Abzan Company, Burn, Red Green Tron, Infect, Jund, Affinity, Splinter Twin, Blank. These are all decks that like have this feel of what modern should kind of look like. And even if you go a little beyond that, where you get Eldrazi, Abzan, Storm, Jeskai, Control, Zoo, this is the modern in my head. And especially like a Affinity, Splinter Twin, and the last deck on the list in Jund are like what I consider the pillars in my head of modern history.
Yeah, definitely. Look, Splinter Twin has been Grixis. It has been Blue Red. It has been Jeskai. It's played Spellskites, Less Spellskites. Yeah, Teemer.
I think Images. In order, it was most often Blue Red straight, secondary Teemer, then Grixis, then Jeskai. I would say actually Jeskai over Grixis.
Yeah, definitely.
Because Jeskai like weirdly did well with it.
Grixis was like one season. Look, I missed this deck a lot. I actually found twin mirror matches and like to be so fun. I like really do think it was like one of the most fun things at the highest level. But I do understand that it was very, very incestuous, that like the decks all kind of looked the same and everything had to be built with this idea that you had to
be able to deal with that and infect at the same time. Like those two decks together really put this weird level of how do you interact with the format.
Yeah, and it was hard to convince yourself if you were ever brewing like a blue red deck to not just be like, well, I should just have the twin cards in there.
And you know, with this deck gone, blue hasn't really ever recovered. I mean, if you look at Merfolk is the only other blue list in the top 9, and Delver in the top 10.
Yeah.
And every other one is a green or red or black deck.
Yeah, I think a lot of
Infect is a blue deck.
I think a lot of the best players missed this deck. I think that a lot of them had a lot of fun playing it. Yep. And it was the, for all the reasons that Jund is fun, but I don't like it, I love this deck, and it's very much the same thing in like the fair tap out version versus like the tricky response version, and the tricky response I win version is much more my kind of deck, and I miss it. So
sure. Number one, 10-10, 20 points, Birthing Pod.
Yeah. I try to argue it. 6 Grand Prix wins, and it was only really legal for like 18 months or so. Like really?
No.
I mean, not only legal, but it was the prominent deck being played at the tier one level.
It was the best deck in the format for about a year and a half plus, which is more than any other deck here. Like, that's a huge run of being the best deck in Modern. And part of the reason, even before that, it was you know, one of those, it was probably the best deck, but people weren't good enough at it. It was one of the most difficult decks to win with. And so because of that skill cap, it took a year for enough players to start just getting enough reps in with it to be able to really master it. And then at that point, it just became like,
yeah,
insane. And then eventually Siege Rana was printed and it became less hard to play and more like, oh, there's no way I can lose.
Right.
So my question is, this is a deck that won through, I think, at least one, if not two GPs during the Delve spell era.
Yeah,
like,
so
it's like Ancestral Visions was a card legal in the format and they couldn't beat Birthing Pod.
Kiki Angel falls into this category, right? Because the Kiki Angel deck was a Birthing Pod deck.
Well, Kiki Pod.
Yeah.
And Angel Pod. And Malira Pod are the three major pod archetypes.
Right.
Kiki Pod being the one that was very glass cannony. So the Malira Pod is classically considered the best one because it was the one that just like basically was a Kitchen Finks deck that also just automatically won by playing a couple free cards.
Yeah, and there was just like
Angel Pod is a very similar deck and probably was comparable.
Right.
And then
because the idea being obviously that you could
pod into Restoration Angel, which then would blink your Kitchen Finks, and yeah, it like.
Well, that's not. That's Kiki Pod. It has Restoration Angels.
You just
it didn't have Kitchen Finks.
Oh, that didn't play Kitchen Finks?
No. Malira Pod is the Kitchen Finks deck.
I thought
more
they
than
both,
anything, it was just like it was like Teleria, not Teleria West.
Gavinny Township.
Gavinny Township and Kitchen Finks and Malira were just really
Kiki
good.
Kiki Pod played at least one Kitchen Finks just for the chain because it's like the best value chain card.
Maybe what Kiki did, Kiki Pod did more than anything was it played like Splinter Twins and combo cards. So it would untap Birthing Pod. So like if you untapped with two creatures in play of like seven different mana combinations,
yeah, right.
You like automatically won.
Yeah, always. Yep.
Like that. But the point is that that's all it did.
Yeah.
Like it had no way of killing you other than comboing out versus Malira combo that killed you through comboing out. And then Angel combo was basically another version of Malira combo, but it was more resistant to graveyard hate.
Yeah.
But it had a worse creature. And still played. This is Angel combos in Coco decks, but Spike Feeder is just a worse card than Malira is. And Archangel Lothune is an insane card.
It's funny that the Court of Calling, its success and its prominence during the era of this was like, it was a good, but like people didn't give it its due, and then this got banned, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, actually, Court of Calling just really, really, really good.
In reality, I think, and we separated them not to just make it totally unfair, I guess, in the contest, but like Coco and Birthing Pod are really both Court of Calling decks that happen to have a other engine card.
Yes.
Because like you mentioned that they're different. They're not that different. The difference between Birthing Pod is it has a little bit more of the singleton. It has a much larger singleton package.
Yes.
And it has a higher converted mana cost. It has like the Revelark endgame and the Ranger of Eos endgame that the Coco decks don't have.
I would also argue that the Birthing Pod version of this deck played in a much more consistent linear fashion, where I think that the Collected Company versions of this deck is much more like just what I draw and the game's going to go one way or another.
I think you have to be a better player to do better. A better player does better with Birthing Pod than a better player does with Coco.
Yeah, the Birthing Pod deck was like, if the Birthing Pod player had Pod in their opening hand, they would just like look at the rest of their cards and be like, okay, like I think.
Well, you
I
saw
can
me
probably,
on
like,
Game Nights, right? When my one Game Nights appearance with Jimmy and Josh.
I did not.
Oh, you should watch it. It's sick. I play Birthing Pod. So I play my Birthing Pod deck, my Highlander deck, because we had to use partner commanders, and you can change that very quickly because it's four color into the red, green, and the black, white new pair commanders.
Yeah.
And
oh, no, I did watch this. Yeah. I take this back.
And I like wrecked because I had Birthing Pod in my opening hand, and Birthing Pod is an unbeatable card.
Yeah, card set.
It was better because it had Phyrexian mana, so like Abrupt Decay didn't kill it, so it was like an unkillable threat at the time.
Yeah.
And you just like won when you like Birthing Pod is an insane card. Like it's better for Magic that it's on the format, though I think it's worse from a fun perspective that I don't get to play with it more often.
I feel you. That's fair. That is fair.
And yeah, so every card in this deck is just insane. And Beleriand is the best one. I mean, that was kind of what was decided upon at the end, especially even with Rhino. Like, the way this deck is good is you beat down.
Yep.
And you use ramp spells, and eventually those become great things, and you win.
If they slow you down, you go wide with Gavinny Township and attack with a bunch of 3/3s.
Yeah, if they can answer your. And it's similar to the Splinter Twin problem, where Splinter Twin was a. Control deck with a combo. This was a aggro deck with a combo.
Right.
Where, like, basically you could either be paying attention to the combo and then lose to the aggro deck, or pay attention to the aggro deck and then lose to the combo deck.
Yep.
And Affinity was, you know, and Splinter Twins very similar. Both of these had that kind of play to it. And that's really what you want to look at. We've always said having two game plans is the best way for a deck to function, especially when those game plans both go in the same direction. You know, Affinity has the spear and the army.
Right.
You know, I have an army that I'm attacking you with 6/1/1s that are all getting pumped slowly or quickly, but then also at any point of time, I can just make a 12/0 attack you, or 12/2 attack you in the air. And so you have to worry about both very thoroughly.
Totally.
You know, Jund goes anywhere from, oh, I got Tarmogoyf on turn 2, Thoughtseize, Tarmogoyf, Liliana of the Veil, you're dead, to, you know, and Jund does a little bit more of like a discard aggro deck. So you, having multiple plans definitely helps. And if you look at the top three decks in the format, that's what they all do.
Totally. Yeah. I'm with you.
It's why I'm a little excited about this zombie combo deck.
Yeah.
With the enchantment that got spoiled.
Oh, yeah.
No counters can be placed.
Solemnity.
And it goes, and what's his face? Garoff's Messenger.
Yeah, it seems really good.
Just like you need to sack out those two cards. It's very Malira-esque, but it'd be interesting.
Yeah, right. I'm in.
So that's the top 30, really top 20, technically top 10. Very, very, very structured. There's no arguing with what we said. Definitely don't go on Twitter and yell at us about what we said is wrong here, because you're wrong.
You're yelling at the wrong people. The scientists aren't on Twitter.
Yeah, nope, they're not on Twitter. Yeah. But I mean, you should yell at us on Twitter at the MMCast. I'm at Cass Wiley.
You definitely should. I'm Ben Bateman Media.
You make sure to go to collected.company, where our episodes are posted in the command zone. They do awesome content.
Yeah.
Video content versions, all that good stuff. Make sure to check out our Facebook group. It is on Facebook. Look for it. Google Masters of Modern or the MMCast, and you'll find it.
Sounds awesome.
It technically does not exist at the time of me recording this episode, but I will recreate it before it goes live.
And find me on Anchor at 10 Minutes of Magic. Go download the station.
Wow, that was so enthusiastic.
Yeah, look, it's a sweet thing. I just have plugged it so many times. I feel like if I was cool about it this time, maybe you guys would do it.
Is being sarcastic and uninterested cool? I guess, yeah, technically, according to the universe, being sarcastic and uninterested is the exact definition of being cool.
Yeah, let me just explain to you why what I just did was cool. It'll encourage you to download the station more appropriately.
Yeah, I don't know. I like things. And make sure to check out our Patreon. It's really important. It makes it so we can do the things we do. You can get to do brew-offs with us. We, you know, either once a block or once a set, we're going to have brew-offs, so you get to donate money, and then you get to submit your brew, and then we'll judge it against other brews and maybe deck tech it.
Yep.
And we love all of you, and we want to see you next week when we release our next episode.
Exactly. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.